Thanks to Lumen 5 for supporting the Productivity Show. Lumen 5 is a video creation website that allows people to create short-form, shareable videos in a matter of minutes. Go to lumen5.com/TPS and get 50% off your first month. Thanks also to Grammarly for supporting the Productivity Show. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/TPS to get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. Welcome to The Productivity Show, a podcast by Asian Efficiency to help you maximize your productivity so you can get everything done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. We've helped tens of thousands of people save time, be happier, and become more productive. What's the best way to get started with personal finance? How do you track your money? Which personal finance apps do you recommend? We get these questions a lot by Asian Efficiency readers and podcast listeners. That's what we're going to be covering in today's episode. I'm joined this time by Charles Ngo, a successful entrepreneur and one of my best friends. You might recognize his name because he was on a podcast before in episode 143, where we talked about how to get started with an executive assistant. About 3 years ago, Charles started to dive into personal finance and he started to track every single cent he ever spent. He learned a lot along the way and I asked him to share his workflow, tools, and how he budgets so you can get started with managing your money and finances in a more efficient way. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/261. And now, on with the show. With me today, I have one of my best friends, Charles Ngo. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Great to be back here. How are you doing?
It's good to have you back. I know we had you back a while back talking about executive assistants, and you were actually one of the people that inspired me to get my first executive assistant, and then we started talking about that on the show, and we'll make sure to link that in the show notes as well. But I'm hoping today you can inspire me to do something else and do something bigger than executive assistants, or maybe something even more awesome than that. And that is personal finances. I've had this topic request for so many years now, and I'm super excited to have you here today. But before we dive in, one of the things we always like to do is to kick it off with our favorite productivity resources. So can you maybe share three of them that you have in 90 seconds or less?
All right. For personal finance, I'm going to say number one is the software You Need a Budget, aka YNAB. The second resource is if you kind of want the 80-20 of personal finance, I would get this book called The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins. And third, my favorite resource for anything financial and pretty much everything in life is I love Google spreadsheets. So I do have a custom spreadsheet that I use to track my net worth. And if you guys want it, I don't mind sharing it. So those are my three favorite resources when it comes to personal finances.
So we'll have links to everything in the show notes. So don't worry if you miss any of it. Make sure to check out the episode show notes to grab everything here. All right, Charles, let's talk about personal finance. This is a topic, like I said earlier, a lot of people have questions about, right? People who are listening to the show, they probably heard of You Need a Budget, YNAB, Mint, but a lot of people have trouble getting started, or they just simply don't know how to get started, or what's even the benefit of using something like YNAB versus just using, you know, your Bank of America or Chase checking account, right? So I'm curious to hear, how did you get started with this whole personal financing?
Yeah, so for me, you know, first of all, I'm 34 years old. I don't have any kids. I'm not married. So a lot of the information I give is from my own experience. And, you know, some of you guys out there are in completely different financial situations. Some of you guys may have family. Some of you guys may be in a lot of debt. So some of what I say may not directly apply to you, but just take what you can. That's why it's personal finances. So with me, how did I get started in personal finance? You know, I think for me, I wasn't really taught a lot about money by anyone. Like my parents, all my mom taught me about personal finance was to be cheap. You know, I grew up in an Asian household and we would never buy anything unless it was on sale. So literally my only lever when it came to personal finance was to get a really good job and to save as much money as possible and just be really, really cheap. Well, later on, what happened is I ended up having a lot of success in business. And with my business success over time, my lifestyle inflated quite a bit. Like I bought supercars, I flew business class, I spent a lot of money on clothes, I had really sick condos. And situations would happen where, you know, I got paid a salary and sometimes like, you know, these bills would start adding up. And whenever I didn't have enough money, I would just simply write a distribution check from the company to myself. So I wasn't really keeping track of everything. This was about like 6 years ago. And I realized that when it comes to business and my personal life, I keep track of so many different things. Like I know my business finances pretty well. I know my health KPIs and stuff like that pretty well. But when it came to personal finance, I just really didn't know that much about my own personal situation. All I knew was, if I don't have enough money in the bank to pay for stuff or there's an unexpected bill, I just treated my company like a piggy bank and wrote a distribution check to myself every time. And I realized that this wasn't really a smart way of living. It wasn't really fair to my employees either. So that's when I really sat down and I started trying to learn about personal finance. And I wasn't really happy with the information that I found because a lot of blogs, they place a lot of too much emphasis on frugality. And for me, it just wasn't worth my time to clip coupons, for example. While some other people, their methods felt very archaic. It's like, hey, keep a notepad with you. And every time you spend some money, write it down. So it actually took me a long time to get really involved with personal finance because I just couldn't find the right resources to learn from. And to be quite frank, back then, a lot of the software and stuff just wasn't as sophisticated as it is now. So for me, everything that I learned about personal finance, you know, a lot of it came from blogs, books, Reddit, but most of it just came from making a lot of mistakes and learning along the way.
So why do you feel like you didn't start earlier on this? Because I remember when we first met, this is over, I don't know, 10 years ago now, we've talked a lot about personal finance before. And something we've been aware of, and managing money is always a topic that you and I talk about, you know, privately between us and among our friends. So what do you think held you back for so long from actually getting started?
A lot of things. I would say the very first thing is probably perfectionism. I say that because the thought of keeping track of every single cent I'm spending, I just knew I couldn't keep up with it. I just, if a dollar was off, it would just drive me crazy. And I just didn't want to deal with that. The second thing is my interpretation of personal finance, once again, was just clipping coupons and saving money like that. And for me, I'm from the business world, you know, and other entrepreneurs were all about make as much money as possible. So for me, in terms of time, I always had this feeling that personal finance just took too much time. And that time could be better spent on me just making money. So when it comes to personal finances, you could either save money or make more money. So I always just thought my time's better spent on making more money. But now my philosophy is different because you can do both. And I think I remember hearing a story from someone firsthand in my business space. This guy was like on top of the world. He made so much money. And then several years later, I caught up to him and he's working a 9-to-5 job. And this guy was a multi-millionaire. And I asked him what happened. And long story short, business went bad. He didn't save that much money. His lifestyle was inflated. And at the end of it, he owed so much taxes, he couldn't pay it off. So he just had to get a job. And for me, I was just like, that's not going to be me. You know, I totally, you know, life's good right now, but life's not always going to be good. Like what happens if I'm in the hospital one day? So I just want to make sure that my systems are correct, that I have money in my retirement, I had money in my emergency savings, that everything is just completely bulletproof.
One of the things that you and I have privately talked a lot about that I want to sort of talk openly about here is how money is really emotional and psychological a lot of different ways. And I think that's also a lot of times why people are stuck or why they have some form of hesitation to look into the personal finances, because if you know it's kind of bad or it's not that great, it's easy to, you know, shove it under the rug and say, okay, I'm not even going to look at it because I don't want to face this negativity, the consequences of potentially looking bad or seeing what's in there. Have you experienced this too?
Absolutely. I experienced it back in university, man. Like back in college, I wasn't making a lot of money in college. I was working part-time at the gas station. And I just remember one time I didn't have a lot of money coming in. And for a period of time, man, like for 3 months, I just refused to log in and check my bank account because things were just so bad. I just preferred to just bury my head in the sand. And for me, it was just really tough because logging into that bank account and seeing a low balance, me wasting money on credit cards and all this other stuff, it would just really affect my self-esteem. So I just thought, you know what, let me just ignore it, forget about it, and it'll fix itself, you know, up. And I guess one day I just told myself, you know what, just because I ignore it doesn't mean the problem's going to go away. I have to face reality. I have to face reality the way it is. And if there's a problem, then I have to fix it. So I remember logging into the bank account and there was like, you know, a decent amount of money in there, like $400. Like in my mind, I thought maybe I went overdraft or something, but there was actually $400 because there was some kind of like tax refund I completely forgot about that went in. And that just felt like a giant stone, a rock off my shoulder. And, you know, I know plenty of guys that, you know, they're having tax problems. And the more you ignore tax problems, the more you ignore your credit card problems, then the interest rates, they really kill you. And for a lot of times, the situations are not really that bad. It's when you ignore them that they start building up in your head and becomes worse and worse. It's kind of like in productivity when you procrastinate on a task. And when you actually do it after 6 months, you're like, holy crap, that only took 5 minutes. It wasn't that bad. So for me, it's just, you have to realize that the best way to fix your problems is to face reality. And most of the times, the situations are not that bad.
I remember I was maybe 23, 24, having that exact same situation where I was afraid to log into my checking account because I just didn't want to see what was in there. I might either be in the negative or there might be a surplus. Either way, I just didn't want to know, right? And I remember those days before I went out, right, I had to log into my checking account just to make sure I had some money. So I knew like, okay, there's $150 in there. Okay, I'm good to go. Let's go out for drinks tonight, right? Without even taking into consideration, oh, there's actually this bill that needs to be paid, right? There's this that needs to be paid off. Oh, I actually have to buy some gas later on. You know, there's no sort of sense of forecasting or having any sort of understanding of what free cash flow is and that kind of thing, which yep. I'm sure we'll dive into. But what are some of the things that you sort of learn along the way as you were studying personal finance?
Yeah. So the only way to truly learn about your personal finances is if everything is tracked. Like you can only learn from data, right? Like a scientist. So it's very important when you're learning about your own behavior to not get emotional and just gather data and try to look at it objectively like a scientist. So after several months of using YNAB several years ago, I started having data on how I actually spent money. And it really opened my eyes to some of my own behavior. So the first thing that comes to my mind is everything costs a lot more than you think. So a great example is, I remember one time I went on a trip to Miami and I thought in my mind, it was $1,000. And it turns out that that trip ended up becoming like $2,200. And it's not like I went to the club that night and bought a lot of bottles. It was just, I severely underestimated all these different costs because in my mind, I just thought I got to pay for the hotel and I have to pay for the flight. Boom, $1,000, done. I didn't budget for, okay, I'm going to need a Lyft back and forth. And if I'm doing the Lyft everywhere, that really adds up. I didn't budget food. I didn't budget like, okay, I'm visiting my girlfriend. I have to take her whole family out. And that added, ended up being expensive. And all these little things, oh, I forgot something. And that ended up costing money. So basically everything costs a lot more than I realized. And it's not until I actually looked at the data that I started getting an idea of what the true costs are. Second thing I learned is subscriptions really add up over time. You know, you think like, hey, that $10 a month is really not a lot of money. But over the year, it becomes $120 for something that's $100 a month, you may think, oh, it's just $100 a month. That's $1,200 over the year. So those subscriptions, because right now I really think that we're in this subscription economy, and it's something that I check on all the time. Like, some things are absolutely worth it, like Netflix and Asian Efficiency Dojo, but some other things are not worth it. So I just cut them. And the final thing I learned about finances, so this is really interesting, Tan. I haven't brought this up with you before, but your environment matters so much when it comes to how much you spend. So two quick examples is, several years ago, I quit social media. I don't use Instagram. I don't use Facebook. And once I quit social media, like, my spending went down dramatically because I no longer had the need for flashy, nice designer clothes. Like, if I travel, dude, I'm completely okay in a cheap Airbnb. But back then on social media, I just felt this need to check in into the Ritz-Carlton or something really nice, just because, like, I just felt the need for status or to show off. I mean, no one likes to admit that, but I think deep down, each of us, we crave status to some degree. And something else is, you know, I lived in New York City for the past few years. I lived in Manhattan, and I recently moved to Atlanta to, you know, it's my hometown. I want to be closer to my family. So I actually just did some personal finance stuff today. And it's so interesting, but my eating out budget, my eating out spending, like, cut by 70%. Like, I used to spend about $500 a month eating out in New York. And dude, I spent like $200 this month in Atlanta. And I think it's because when you're in New York, there's like pizza there. You're constantly surrounded by food. So the environment just impacted me. Like, I would walk by to the gym and, oh, this new restaurant opened up. But here in Atlanta, I'm in the suburbs. So when I'm driving every day, I'm just not seeing these places. And yeah, it's very interesting how the environment, I gave a physical example and I also gave an online example, but those things really influence how you spend money.
What you said about budgeting, I think, is so true. When you go on a vacation, yes, you'll be able to budget, let's say, your flight, your hotel, and these are oftentimes things you prepay for, right? And the challenge oftentimes comes for all the stuff that you don't prepay for. The stuff like the food, the restaurants, the Lyfts, the Ubers, whatever, right? And then the other thing is, I think what's missing for a lot of people, including myself sometimes, is the forecasting. And what that means is, for example, right now I hit my early 30s. And so a lot of my friends now are getting married. And guess what? That now means I get invited to weddings. And I'm sure some people who are listening right now can resonate with this. Now you have to fly to the wedding. You have to do best man duties or best, you know, that sort of stuff, right?
Wedding gifts. Dude, wedding gifts are not cheap.
Right. Wedding gifts, it's going to take up more like time off from work, right? Which is going to cost you in other different ways. So there's a lot of not like money costs, but there's also a lot of opportunity costs that comes with that. And there's also just a lot of unexpected expenses that you have that you just don't account for, right? So as an example, last year, I dislocated my shoulder and I had to go to the ER. And luckily, I was covered by health insurance, but I still had to pay the ER fees and all these other, you know, doctor fees and drug fees and whatnot. And even though most, you know, the surgery was covered by insurance and stuff, out of pocket, everything still cost me roughly, I would say, anywhere like $3,000, close to $3,000 or so, right?
So there's two terms I really like. One is called what I call truly unexpected expenses. You know, my dog, he passed away a few months ago. Romeo passed away. But several months ago, before he passed away, he was diagnosed with congestive heart failure and a bunch of other things. And dude, this, my dog was completely healthy. He was 11 years old, super healthy. And the bill was several thousand dollars and I didn't have pet insurance. So that was a truly unexpected expense that happened, but fortunately I had emergency fund to help cover it. So that's what I call something completely unexpected. And then there's also something else I call unexpected expected. So that means this is something you didn't expect, but you should have expected it. A great example is several months ago, I ran out of contacts and I use daily contacts and I'm like, dude, I'm like blind without my contacts. So my contacts are a little bit more on the higher end, but dude, I completely forgot about it. And I needed to get like 6 months or a year supply. And that was several hundred dollars. You know, so the great part is because that happened, I put it in YNAB as an expected expense for a year from now. So my budgeting reminds me that, hey, I need to start budgeting for this.
Yeah. And I think the big takeaway here, again, is just everything is way more expensive than you think it is. It's going to cost you more money. And most of us are not that good at budgeting, right? And I want to get into that a little bit later as well before we dive into the whole workflow, YNAB, and, yep, and that sort of stuff. But the other thing you mentioned earlier was subscriptions. And I totally agree. Something that I think we do a really good job of at Asian Efficiency is I'm ruthless when it comes to subscriptions. So I review like the business finances every week, and I know every single chart that's happening in there. And when I look at that and I say, okay, is this subscription adding any value? If it's not, we cut it right away, right? And especially if we go a little bit more advanced, we start talking about like return on sales, right? Profit margins and stuff. And so just to put that into perspective, right? If you have a subscription that costs $100 a month, right? And you make $1,000 in revenue, right? That $100 a month is 10% of your revenue, right?
Yep.
So if you take that away, that's an extra 10% profit margin that you just increased. But in order to maintain that expense, you need to, you know, if you want to maintain the same profit margins, we need to quote unquote 10x that because it's the 10% profit margin. So you start to see very quickly that every expense that you cut is not only the fastest way to increase your margins, right? Your profit margins and such,
yep,
but also you'll start to see how to calculate what the amount of revenue that you need to generate in order to justify this expense. And when you think about that, you start to look into your personal life as well. And you start to say, oh, you know, the more I'm aware of like, okay, I'm buying this product or this service right now, like what's the expected value or what is the return on sales for this in my personal life? And if I can spend this money on other things like saving it up, putting in an index fund or whatever, you start to really consciously look for opportunities to actually compare or contrast and what do I actually do with this money?
Well, let's take the thought of like $1,000. You know, for me, after learning so much more about money and accounting, $1,000 means more to me now than ever, because $1,000, first of all, that's money you've earned after taxes. So for that $1,000, you might have had to like earn $1,300 or $1,400 to get that $1,000, depending on your tax bracket. The second thing I think about is what's the future value or the opportunity cost of this $1,000? Because I could spend $1,000 on a Michelin star dinner for me and my girlfriend for our anniversary, or that $1,000 could go into her Roth IRA account, and that $1,000 becomes like, I don't know, $25,000 by the time she's like 65 years old. So I'm not saying like I don't like luxurious things or I never eat out or never do anything nice for myself, but all I'm saying is I understand the value of a dollar now. And you have to truly understand this because everything's finite. Your time is finite. Your money is finite. Your energy is finite. Your attention is finite. And it's just about allocating things in the best way possible. And for me, a lot of things that I cared about in the past, I just don't care about anymore. I don't care about really fancy hotels. I don't care about Louis Vuitton or Gucci or some of those really name brand stuff. Instead, I care a lot more about making sure, you know, financial independence, like retiring early. I care about by the time I'm 70 years old, I don't want to depend on my kids when I'm 70 years old, right? So those are things that I care a lot more about. And I think, I don't know, I think that comes with age also. When you're in a relationship, you just don't feel the need to be as flashy anymore. But your values do change over time.
Thanks to Lumen5 for supporting our podcast. Have you ever seen those thumb-stopping videos on social media and wished you could make one? For me, it was a video of people in Iceland at an amazing-looking hot springs. Now, personally, Iceland seems too cold for me, but the video made it look amazing. Our new sponsor, Lumen5, makes creating videos so easy and fun to do. Lumen5 is a video maker website that turns text into video marketing content in minutes. For example, we took one of our blog posts called The Asian Efficiency Guide to Meditation, Lumen5 turned it into a video, which you can check out at theproductivityshow.com/lumen1. It only took a few minutes and it automatically chose all the images and frames. All we did was select the music and add a few points. Here are some of the features of Lumen 5 that I think are cool. You have video made in minutes. Lumen 5 uses AI and machine learning to make it easy to instantly create high quality custom videos to match the look and feel of your brand or your company. Then you have text to video. You can transform an article, a blog post, or even a text message into a video. Just enter your text and the Lumen 5 AI will help you summarize your content and automatically match it with videos and photos. And then there's the media library. Lumen 5's library has millions of free media files available to users, which will give you access to everything you need to produce attention-grabbing videos. Everything you saw in that sample video, including the music, came from Lumen 5's library. So start creating your thumb-stopping, attention-grabbing videos today. Right now, Lumen 5 has a special offer for our podcast listeners. Go to lumen5.com/TPS and get 50% off your first month. That's 50% off your first month at lumen5.com/TPS. Thanks to Grammarly for supporting the Productivity Show. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. They encourage everyone, even the best students and top professionals, to use Grammarly to do their best work and accomplish even more of their goals. So what is Grammarly? I used to hear about it all the time because people around me were always recommending it, but I wasn't sure what it was exactly. Well, Grammarly is a writing assistant that makes you look and sound smarter. In this episode, Charles and I are talking about improving your finances, but there are lots of other ways you can improve yourself. One of them is improving your communication. You can improve yourself and your communication at work, school, and almost anywhere with Grammarly. Whenever you're communicating, you want to show your best self. So how do you use it? There are browser extensions for Chrome, Safari, Firefox, or Edge. There's a Mac and Windows desktop editor, and you can even use it on mobile on iOS and Android. The free version of Grammarly reviews critical spelling and grammar, but Grammarly Premium will do that plus also check advanced punctuation, structure, style within context, conciseness, vocabulary suggestions, and will also look out for readability in all sorts of different situations like business writing, academic essays, and casual blog posts. Stop making email typos on your phone. Close more deals at work this year with your emails and polish your resume to get that new job. This ad is good timing because the team and I just had a big meeting where we looked back at all of our sprints for the whole year to review the improvements we thought we should make and see if we actually did and what the impact was. One of the improvements that we implemented was to use Grammarly for all communication, and it has improved how we present ourselves to the world. Fun fact, I had an extra word in that sentence just now that Grammarly told me I should cut. Like I said, we use Grammarly here at Asian Efficiency. I love it when I'm reviewing an article or an email. And even if I'm not specifically looking for grammar, I see that little red underline and I can make the fix with just one click. So go to grammarly.com/TPS to get 20% off your Grammarly Premium account today. That's grammarly.com/TPS for 20% off your Grammarly Premium account. Yeah, I think you value security a lot more now than you did a few years ago.
Oh yeah, man. When you're freaking like 23, 24, 25 and you're making good money, you think you're freaking invincible. You think the money's going to come in forever. But for me, you know, I've been hit with black swans. For example, I dealt with a lawsuit last year that wasn't good. There's also situations where what happens if my parents get cancer and their insurance won't cover it? Like, do you have enough money to help them out? And it's just really scary when I see these, you know, GoFundMes and there's people that their parents, you know, passed away suddenly and they don't have enough money for their funeral. So, you know, I know everyone's in a different situation, but for me, I just want to make sure I have enough money saved up securely just because stuff always happens. And I have health insurance, but man, I don't want to completely rely on it. Like if it's there, it'll cover things, great. But if something happens to me, I want to make sure that I'm taken care of, my family's taken care of, my dog's taken care of. Like, you know, stuff happens. That's all I can say.
you've tried a lot of different things, right, over the years. And I'm curious to hear from you, what are some of the things that you've tried that eventually either led you to where you are right now using YNAB or the workflow that you have today before we start diving into that? I'm curious to hear, what are all the things that you've tried?
Yeah, man. My very first like personal finance system ever was back in college when I didn't have a lot of money. I used something called the envelope system. So every time you get a paycheck, let's say I got a $500 paycheck, I would literally go to the bank, cash it out, and then I would have different envelopes, and this envelope would be rent. This another envelope would be groceries. This another envelope would be savings, and another envelope would be everything else. So everything I bought would be cash, because there's a study shown, I don't know the percentage, but when you're using cash, you're a lot less likely to spend compared to credit card, because it's physical. It's tangible. You can actually see it. So I used that when I was in college, but for me right now in 2019, with so many different bills and stuff, and in this generation, it's just not as feasible. I also tried mint.com. So I haven't used Mint in a few years. I've heard they really improved, but back then I really didn't like Mint because it wasn't really budgeting. Budgeting is for how you have the money, how you're going to spend it in the future. What Mint does is the way it had everything set up was I would spend it and I would just look at things in the past. So it just wasn't really good for me. And then the final thing is when I first started using YNAB, I actually paid someone. I paid someone to handle my YNAB for me. So they had access to my YNAB. They had access to, you know, and YNAB had access to my bank accounts tied in. So they would actually go in, categorize everything for me. I still had to do some work because some things they wouldn't recognize a charge. So I didn't like that, because what I realized is it didn't keep me close enough to the numbers. Like what happened is I would just kind of see the total, but my brain wouldn't work and process in terms of analyzing it. So it's something interesting about, you know, you spend $60 on this meal, but when you're actually looking at it again 3 days later and you're categorizing it, it makes you think, man, was that meal worth $60 or $150, whatever it was? So I tried to systemize things because I'm always trying to be more efficient. But this is one of those things where I think it's actually worth doing the hard way. And what's interesting is the way I do it now, I wouldn't really consider it too hard. But because once again, right now it's 2019, so a lot of the technology has really advanced and gotten good. But my point is I've made a lot of mistakes to get to where I am now. And I'm at the point now where I'm pretty confident in sharing my system and thinking it's good.
So let's dive into that then. What does your personal finance system look like right now?
Yeah. So this is how it is right now in 2019. First of all, I want to say that I don't do this alone. I actually have a personal finance coach or accountability partner. His name's Scott. He's been very important to this because so much of personal finance, you deal with it yourself. And we don't deal with the consequences. We don't have anyone to talk to, because personal finances, once again, it's so personal that it feels very uncomfortable sharing details with other people. So I do have a guy I talk to once a month. You know, I do pay him. And yeah, we just go over my personal finances each month. And what he provides is, it's interesting. At first, I hired him to help me out with some questions on YNAB, but he actually helps me out a lot more than that. So number one, I go over my spending for the month. Like, okay, here's what went well. Here's what didn't go as well. I also go over some of my goals. Like each month we set some goals. How did I do? So in a way, it's like, and anytime I have something that I'm not familiar with, he can answer. So for example, like I'm trying to set up my estate, my wills, couples finances, you know, some of this other stuff. And he actually has experience in this. So for me, by having that guidance, it's, you know, when it comes to personal finance, man, everyone's trying to make money from you. Everyone's trying to make money from you. Someone recommends this, someone recommends that. Like for me to recommend whatever I recommend, there's no affiliate link. I'm not making any money. So with him, it's kind of like I get the honest truth and it saves me a lot of time. So that's the first thing, like having a accountability partner really helps.
Did you find that by having that accountability partner, every time you were spending something, was he then in the back of your head
No, not necessarily. You know, with this guy, he's not judgmental. He just gives a different perspective. I think for me, his main value will probably be he keeps me on track. Like the fact is I've been keeping track of my finances, personal finances to this degree for maybe like 3 years now. Before then it was just, I would start on for like several months and then I would go on a vacation. Everything's completely messed up and I would quit for several months. But with him, I'm extremely consistent with all my stuff. So I have data from the past several years and it's so fun to like just really dig in through this data. So that's the first thing, accountability partner or coach. Second is YNAB, you need a budget. So I've tried a lot of different budgeting systems out there. And for me, you know, YNAB's always going to be my top recommendation. It does cost money. I don't know how much it costs, maybe like $60 a year, but the amount of insight I get, completely worth it. So with YNAB, man, I hated YNAB the first time I used it because I think the first time I used it was several years ago. And back then you had to input everything manually. And then I would keep this up for like a week before I quit. I was like, man, I don't want to like type in $4.50 for Starbucks or something. And it wasn't until several years ago that they started having something called an import function. So now the way YNAB works is if I spend $5 at Starbucks, I'm not going to log it in. The next day, there's a feature called import where you hit import and it downloads everything from your bank and your credit cards and it's there. All I got to do is like, hey, here's Starbucks. I go in and I categorize it. So I'll categorize it as cafes or desserts. And what's really cool is you don't have to do this every single time because over time it starts understanding your preferences. Like Starbucks every single time is going to be coffee. This restaurant every single time is going to be eating out. The main manual thing is freaking like Amazon or Costco because you go to Amazon, it's not always going to be groceries. It's not always going to be household goods. So, but YNAB makes it easy for me to go in and I can split it accordingly. So $20 is for groceries, $35 for this, $25 for that. So I use YNAB a lot to categorize my spending and also budget because I'm a business owner, but what people don't realize is whatever your business makes doesn't mean you make that much because I get a salary, right? Like we all get salaries and we get distributions. So every single month, or twice a month bi-weekly, I get my salary and then I have to budget it accordingly because I have rent, I have groceries, I have jujitsu, I have all this other stuff. So I deal with that. Next thing is I try to systemize and make everything automated. So I have a sheet with this and what I do is everything is completely automated. My rent's automated, my power bill is automated, car loan is automated. I wish it was as simple, but the problem is some vendors, like they only take paper checks, but fortunately if you use Chase, they can actually mail a check for you. So I always do that. And to make things simpler, I have to actually call into each of these places to make sure that the bill is due on the same date. So I called in, hey, can you make my bill due on the first? So they withdraw everything on the same day. And you know, there's always this fear like, man, what if they do things wrong? Or what if I have a $2,000 bill by mistake? I've never actually had anything go wrong with that. But by having everything automated, I haven't had a late bill in like a decade. So that is really, really useful. Two additional tools that I use that I don't see too many people use. So this is outside of YNAB, but I actually have a spreadsheet that tracks my net worth. So every single month on the first, I manually type everything in. So I also use personalcapital.com as well. Personal Capital is a way that aggregates all my investments and my debts, credit card debts or whatever I have. And from there, it's a really cool tool. So I like it a lot. It's a way to see all my systems at once. So by having this net worth sheet, you know, the reason why I have it is, man, I got a lot of weird things that can't be tracked in YNAB or any of those things. For example, I had a lot of money in cryptocurrency. I don't want to get into that, but that was very manual how I had to keep track of that. Lending club, some other stuff like cash. So I like having this net worth sheet in the Excel because with the Excel, I can manipulate the data into different charts to help me understand more. One more tool I really like that I just started using 3 months ago is the cash flow forecasting. So it's something I use a lot in business, but I recently applied it to my personal life. So what this means is I have cash flow forecasting for the rest of the year. So what this means is, let's say every single month you have $5,000 coming in. And for the most part, a lot of things are automated. Like, you know how much is going to retirement, you know how much is going for rent, you know how much is going to like a lot of your bills. But what cash flow forecasting does is it helps me predict and save up for what's unexpected. So if Tan gets married in September, then I know it'll probably cost me about, like, I don't know, let's say like $2,500, because I got to fly there, I got to get a suit. He might want me in a bright pink suit or something, so I have to have the money for that. Got to get him a wedding gift. So the thing is, by having that $2,500 in that I'm going to need in September, now I can see where that money is coming. So now that it's May, now I know, oh crap, I have to start saving $500 a month for the next 5 months to have that $2,500. So it's a way to look into the future. So weddings, man, weddings is one. Another one is vacations. Another one that's really big is just meeting family, because my girlfriend's family is in Miami. So we have to, like, okay, we got to see them for Christmas. So we have the cash flow forecasting, the budget for that. So with all these tools, and what's interesting is a lot of these tools are based off of accounting. You know, like, I have the budgeting, I have the balance sheet, the net worth sheet is the balance sheet. I have the cash flow forecasting. I use that. I learned that from accounting as well. So yeah, those are all the main tools that I use.
So how do you use these tools on a daily or weekly basis? And how does this then affect your decision-making? So for example, let's say you're looking at your net worth and it has gone up, or maybe it's gone the opposite way. It has gone down. What happens then?
Yeah. So very good question. That's actually a lot of questions. So I'm going to break it up into smaller ones. The first one is, let's talk about the actual workflow. What do I do on a daily and weekly basis and a monthly basis? First of all, I don't do anything on a daily basis. You know, at first you do, because once you start getting a hang of it, it's like super fun and super addicting. But after a while, it gets a little redundant. So I actually have a meeting with myself to go over my personal finances, and it takes place every Sunday for 30 minutes. So I have a weekly recurring meeting for 30 minutes by myself. And in that time, I go to YNAB and I do what's called reconciliation. So this means, oh, this restaurant I went to, YNAB doesn't recognize that it's a restaurant. So I have to categorize it. So I do that. The next thing I do is just make sure there's no outstanding bills, because unfortunately, not every one of my bills can be automated to the first, wherever. So I got to do that. Second is, I do some reflection. So I look over how much money I spent for the week. Is everything in line or out of line? Most of my stuff happens on a monthly basis, on the first of every single month, because that's when I calculate my net worth. That's when I'm calculating my budget for the upcoming month. Because with YNAB, you have $5,000 coming in, whatever. Well, that's when I have to allocate, okay, $2,000 for rent, $500 for groceries, $800 for retirement, whatever. So that's when you actually sit down. But fortunately, it's not as manual as it sounds, because YNAB has so many awesome features where I can copy and paste from last month, and then I can adjust my way from there. So back to your final question about the net worth, how does my net worth going up or going down affect anything? It affects absolutely nothing. Because for me, I have so much money in the stock market via Vanguard index funds. So I'm a bogglehead. Shout out to any boggleheads out there. But for me personally, dude, man, in the past 6 months, my net worth has swung up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down because of stock market, right? So it doesn't make sense to pay attention to my entire net worth on a monthly basis, because so much of it is influenced by the swings in the market. And man, don't even get me started on like how much my net worth swung because of cryptocurrency last year. So between cryptocurrency and the stock market, I was like, at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter. I focus on what truly does matter. And for me, my income is, you know, derived from my businesses. So I focus on earning more income through my business. My investments, I'm 100% VTSAX. Everything's in that index fund. So I don't play around with my investments. What I care the most about is cutting my expenses. So basically, there's four things to, you know, making more money. You can either increase your income, decrease your expenses, increase your rate of return, or increase the amount of time you are in the market. And I can't change, I can't go back in time and affect how long I am in the market. As far as chasing your rate of returns, man, I'm done with that game. Like, dude, anytime I try to pick individual stocks or I get into some high risk stuff like cryptocurrency, I end up losing. So I am done with that. Instead, I just mash the market using index funds. My income, you know me, dude, I'm grinding every single day in my businesses trying to make some more money. So the thing that I can directly impact the most is my expenses. So in regards to that, back to original question, what I pay attention the most is how much I'm spending on a monthly basis, you know, and I divide this into different periods. So I look at two metrics. Here's how much money I've spent so far for the past 6 months. And I'm just trying to like spend under that. And also I'm looking at my savings rate. So if you make like $10,000 a month and you spend $5,000 a month, then your savings rate is 50%. So I'm trying to increase that number. And for me, I don't look at things on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. No, the more data you have, you know, I put these into different charts. I look at the trend lines. The trend lines are the most important things.
Yes, I totally agree. And I'm glad you added that at the end, because I was actually going to get to that, because yes, your net worth will fluctuate. But at the end of the day, on a 6 month, 12 month, 18 month basis, the trend line should still go up, right? If it doesn't go up, then Houston, we definitely have a problem. Because
one more thing. I think you were going to ask this, but I'm going to answer it ahead of time. But basically, how does the data influence behavior? Because I know at Asian Efficiency, you guys are, you know, dive a lot into human behavior a lot. And I think the best source to improve your behavior is, of course, Rituals by Asian Efficiency. So for me, I look at the data and I think to myself, what does this data tell me about my behavior? I tie it into behavior and I try to look at the undermanning psychology. So let me give you a quick example. Man, back in New York City, I spent a lot of money eating out because New York is just amazing. So much good food. And then, man, this is something that I definitely wanted to start cutting. Because I was spending like 500, 600, sometimes 800 or even 1,000 if like there's special dinners and stuff. And I would just ask myself like, okay, what's the behavior? What's the psychology behind it? Like, why am I spending so much money? And I realized because I worked at home, eating out wasn't about the food. Eating out was my way of getting out the house. So me and my girlfriend, I just realized instead of like eating out all the time, why not just like go out and just like walk to the park and hang out? And that satisfied the itch. So the itch wasn't me like going out and eating really good food, even though I enjoyed it. The main itch was, man, I've been in the house for freaking 12 hours today. I need to go outside and get some fresh air and get some sunshine. Something else I also realized is I spent a lot of money on gifts for other people. That's something that I never really caught until I looked at my YNAB that, dude, I would get like people I barely knew, like $100, $200, $300 gifts. And I asked myself, why is that? And I realized, I guess for me, I always, you know, in the five love languages, I'm a giver. So I always just had this mentality that I want someone's friendship. I want them to like them more. So I have to spend money to get acceptance. Or I have to spend money to show them that, dude, I really do value their relationship. And I just really challenged myself to, you know what? Someone's birthday is coming up. I want to give them a gift. Let me just sit back and think of something like much more meaningful. So in that regards, like instead of getting them like a $300 like Bose headphones or something, I would think, man, this guy did mention to me, he really wants to improve at copywriting. So I would get him like three copywriting books for $60, but these were like ones that I curated especially for him. Or someone mentioned to me that, hey, they really wanted they've never had like a sushi omakase, yeah, before. So I would get them for that. I would get them that experience, which sometimes doesn't have to cost that much. So that's what I mean about looking at the data and tying it to your own behavior. And the most important thing is truly understanding why you do the things that you do. And for me, you know, I remember like after I started making a lot of money at the age of 23, man, like I bought so many like name brand belts, like Louis Vuitton belts for like $500 and Gucci belts for like $400. And dude, it's not like they hold my pants up any better than like something you could find at Marshall's. But why was I getting it? Because I just, you know, I remember getting the belt one time from someone as a gift and I wore it. I didn't really know what the brands were. And I remember like getting a lot of compliments on wearing that belt. So I tied in psychologically that, man, if I buy expensive belts, I get compliments from people. And then over time I realized, I mean, compliments are nice, but they're not worth like $400, $500. You know, shoot, I'll compliment myself in a mirror for free. So that's what I mean. Look, like it's not just about gathering the data. I know you guys care a lot about the workflow and the productivity of personal finance, but you also have to make the space to reflect upon the data and seeing what that data is trying to tell you.
Right. Data is just data. And whatever story we can create around that is something that we can make up for ourselves and what that means, right? Yep. And how we interpret that. So going back to what you were saying earlier, I totally resonate with that because a few years ago, this was back when I was still living in Los Angeles, I, just like you, work from home and I always need an excuse to go out, right? Leave the house and get some fresh air. And just like you, I would go out. So I would eat out. I would have lunch. I would have dinner elsewhere versus cooking at home or, you know, eating from home, which obviously is more cost effective and efficient, especially if you live in a westernized country. That might not always be true if you live in Asia or different parts of the world, but definitely in Western countries, that is the case. But the other thing I noticed was, so because I was working from home and I needed to avoid myself from burning out, I said, okay, I need to start working on Saturday, right? So I introduced this whole idea of like no work Saturday, NWS, right? So I would have to leave my house and specifically focus on not work, but doing other things. So the whole point was, okay, I had to leave my home because if I'm sitting at home or I see my computer nearby, I'm automatically thinking about work. So I'm not really disconnecting. So the first couple of weeks or first couple of months, I should say, what I would do is I would always go to the mall, right? Because it was so close. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And it was easy way to kill time and just kind of like, quote unquote, enjoy myself. And this was also at a time when I didn't have a lot of friends, or if my friends weren't available, this is my go-to spot. Well, guess what happens if you spend 3 hours in a mall?
You gotta go shopping.
Exactly. You're having desserts, you're eating lunch there, which is more pricey than elsewhere. And as you're just walking by, you're seeing stuff, you're just naturally more inclined to buy stuff. And guess what happened? That's what I ended up doing, right? I ended up buying more stuff that I needed just because I was in that environment. And it wasn't because I needed that stuff necessarily. It was because I was placing myself in that environment and zooming out even a little bit more. It's because I forced myself to get out of the home. But like you were saying earlier, there are other alternatives and options for quote unquote being outside of your home.
Yeah, it's about peeling back the layers, peeling back the onion and seeing what the core reason for the behavior is.
And going back to what you're saying earlier about your net worth, one of the examples that just comes to my mind, there's just so much semblance with business, is you think about a leading indicator and you think about an end result, right? So you think about net worth, your leading indicator is something that you can influence, a metric, and you were saying how much you spend or how much, you know, how much revenue you generate, right? These are kind of like two things you can influence that will eventually impact the outcome, which is your net worth. And yep. For those who aren't in business or are not familiar with this concept, I think a simple example to explain this is, you know, there was this school and one of the things that they wanted to do was to increase the grades of all the kids in this particular class, right?
Yep.
And they tried a lot of different things from like, you know, doing extra homework, teaching a different way, making sure that, you know, kids were doing X, Y, and Z. And none of that really worked, but they found the one thing, the one indicator that was closest to increasing kids' grades. And it was totally unexpected, but it was actually the rate of kids showing up on time for class. And if they could influence that rate of kids showing up on time for class, that had a high correlation with their grades going up. And so all they would do at that particular school was just forcing kids to get closer, faster to school so they would show up on time. So the buses would leave earlier, right? If they might have to change a route for certain people or for certain kids, or they would have to change the bus so it's bigger capacity so they could transport kids or more kids faster that way, right? So they were just obsessed about this one metric of how do we get kids to show up on time? And that was leading to the result of higher grades. And it's the same thing here, right? So if we want to increase our net worth, we can't just focus on like quote unquote net worth and just look at that. We want to look at things that we can actually influence, because like you said earlier, you can't influence what's going on in the stock market, right? You can't do that. But what you can influence is your spending and how much income you generate generally, right? There's a market circumstance for sure, but generally these are two things that you can influence. So let's focus on that and let's simplify the whole thing.
It reminds me of Power Habit, pretty much Keystone Habit. In Power Habit, I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys have read the book, but the Keystone Habit was this one company that realized safety is the most important thing to improving their numbers. So they laser focused on safety. And for me, I think one of my Keystone Habits, if we're talking about expenses, is becoming a better cook. Like, man, you know, for the longest time, I ate out all the time because I was such a crappy cook. And it wasn't until I made a decision, I want to be a better cook. And it wasn't just for financial reasons, but it was just for an inner intrinsic motivation, a way of expressing myself artistically. So I started taking cooking classes and I started going on YouTube and learning, buying cookbooks. And it's interesting, but the better the cook I became, dude, the less I want to eat out, because I can totally, next time you're in Atlanta, man, I'm going to grill you a mean steak. Like, I go to Costco, I barbecue in my backyard. It's so good. I don't even want to go to a steakhouse. Like, you're telling me, do I want to eat my own steak or go to a steakhouse? I'd rather stay home and eat. It's that darn good. But that was a Keystone Habit. And I mean, I'm not sure how much that's affected my net worth, but I have noticed that my eating out bill has gone down a lot.
So let's talk a little bit nerdy and specific here before we wrap it up. Because When I think about a personal finance system, I think about, as a natural system thinker, about, you know, processes, components. So if we zoom out, what does your personal finance system look like in terms of components? Do you, for example, have a checking account? Do you have a savings account? Is there such thing as an emergency fund? Do you have, like, you know, where do you park your cash? Where do you park your money? Where's your investments? Like, if you look at your net worth, essentially, where does that all come from? And how does that all sort of like tie together?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk nerdy. So first things first, I have most of my stuff tied into Chase. So I really like Chase because they have a lot of branches everywhere. So I only have a checking account. I don't have a savings account. And that's because with YNAB, the way it works is just, you don't really need a savings account. You know, everything is just in my checking account. And I just have separate categories that indicates like, this is how much I have in my emergency fund. So that's the first thing. Some tools that I use. So in terms of investments, I've mentioned before, I'm a huge fan of index funds. So I have a lot of money in Vanguard directly, but I also have some money with Betterment.com. So Betterment is what's called a robo-advisor. So they have a lot of interesting features that they include. Like, they do tax loss harvesting and some other things. So with Betterment, there's also like Wealthfront, but I don't even know why I signed up for Betterment. But I have my Roth IRA parked there. So for me, what's very important for me is maxing out every single retirement option possible. So every single year, I max out my 401k, which is $19,000. And for my business, I use guideline.com. So think of it like the 2.0, you know, it's very modern. So $19,000 each year, automatically, it goes out my paycheck and my company, I own the company, so I match it 4%, I believe. I also have the Roth IRA. So I think the max is $5,500 or $6,000. I actually think it's $6,000. So I take out $550 every single month that goes into Betterment. So that's all automated. Like, dude, I don't look at it. I don't even think about it. And finally, I also max out my health savings account, my HSA. So I use hsabank.com, I believe. So that maxes out at $3,400 a year. And I think from HSA Bank or HSA Savings, I don't remember, it gets invested through TD Ameritrade. So that handles that. I'm also really big on having good insurance. So I have, not only do I have the standard insurance, but I spend a little bit more money to make sure the insurance is better. So for example, I have renter's insurance, I have car insurance, but dude, you know, I went through a lawsuit and I have a lawyer friend. And what people don't realize is like, dude, you could have $1 million net worth and someone could sue you for the dumbest thing and can totally wipe you out. So with me in Georgia, I mean, car insurance is pretty expensive in Georgia. You know, you don't really have to have that much coverage. But for me, man, like I spend a little bit more money. For example, I pay extra for uninsured motorists. So if someone hits my car and don't have insurance, well, you know, what happens then? I pay a little bit extra. So if, I don't know, a little kid's in my yard or something and they slip and they break a bone, well, dude, technically the parent can sue you and they can sue you for a lot of money. So I have insurance for that. Yeah, for the most part, I just keep it simple. Everything's in cash or retirement vehicles. Any extra cash I have, I invest in Vanguard without the retirement benefits, but I don't mess with I don't mess with bonds. I don't mess with, I'm not saying bonds are bad. At 34, I'm just going to wait until I'm 40 years old before I start investing in bonds. I don't mess with money market accounts, certificate deposits, all that. I don't invest in gold. I don't invest in silver. For me, dude, it's all about keeping it as simple as possible because I know myself, dude. Like, I'm an optimizer. I am a ADD optimizer. So the less I deal with this stuff, the better I am. That's why it's so important for me to have everything systemized, automated, simple rules, like 100% VTSAX. Because dude, if I start trying to optimize like 20% bonds, 30% long-term investments, 20% REITs, dude, I'm going to be messing with that every single month. I know myself because that's what I used to do back in the day. So for me, I have a simple rule. I just stick with it. I want to focus on the 80-20. Charles can focus on making more money via his businesses. Charles can focus on the expenses. This other stuff, like, let me get this stock, let me get that stock, let me optimize this. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. And it's just such a waste of my energy, my time, and my mental energy, man. My mental energy is a real thing.
So let's go through a hypothetical example here I think it will simplify a lot of things for a lot of people. Yeah. So let's imagine we have a person here that is a high earner. Let's say this person earns $100,000 after taxes. Okay.
Big money. Holla.
So something I should have said at the very beginning, but we are not financial advisors here. So take this with a grain of salt, right?
Yep.
But let's say this person earns $100,000 after taxes. What do you think this workflow, this system should look like for this person?
Sure. $100,000 after taxes. So very first, most important thing is to max out your, let's take this back all the way to personal finance 101. First things first, establish an emergency fund. You know, establish an emergency fund, which should be about 3 to 6 months of savings because stuff always happens. Black swans. I mean, it always happens. So I would save up that emergency fund and I would just, you know, you could park it at an online savings account like Ally or something. I mean, there are some out there that pay like 1 or 2%. For me, I mean, it's just not really worth my time. I just keep everything in Chase. Second thing is pay off debts. You know, I don't know if, who knows, this guy who's making $100,000 might be having a lot of debt. So I would pay off like any credit card debts or any high interest debts, stuff like student loans and cars and stuff and mortgage. It really depends what the interest rate is, because if you're getting a low interest rate, like 3 or 4%, then it might be worth just, you know, paying the minimum or paying something normal. But if you have like a freaking credit card debt that's like 20% APR, you got to kill it as soon as possible, because the stock market doesn't do 20% a year on average. So when you pay off a credit card, you're instantly getting that ROI. So that's the next thing. Pay off any debt you have. Next is you really want to focus on your retirement stuff. So max out your, and you know, it depends, because not every company offers a 401k. Every company has a different retirement percentage. But I would research your retirement situation. You know, you could always do traditional Roth IRA for $5,500. Max out your 401k if it makes sense. Max out your HSA if it makes sense and it's available for you. The tough part, Tan, is like, I don't know who the reader is. Like, they could be in India. Shout out India. They could be in a company that doesn't offer a lot of this stuff. So I'm just saying it from my perspective and what's available to me. And then finally, once you have even more money, then just start saving up for the big stuff. When I mean the big stuff is, dude, the average wedding costs $35,000. I'm already saving up for my future wedding one day. So average wedding costs $35,000. I mean, honeymoons cost $5,000. Engagement rings average costs like $6,000 or something like that. I don't know. You got to save up for, you know, all this other thing. So that's where I would also look things up at. Or some other people, they have to save up for their housing. If you want to buy a house, well, guess what? 20% down payment. And if you're getting a $500,000 house, that's $100,000 you got to save up. My point is, dude, there's so many different things to save up from. So, you know, sometimes when I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and you see these people living their best lives out there, like, dude, it may not be the truth. Like, you see someone with a nice car, you see someone that's constantly traveling. Well, dude, what don't you see? They might be in debt. They might have $80,000 in student loans. They might be 35 years old with zero money saved in their retirement account. So I think that's the tough part when it comes to personal finances, because you could be doing everything correct. You could be maxing out your retirement and all that stuff. No one cares. It's not sexy. You're not going to get a like for it. You're not going to get any comments for it. Our society rewards us for being dumb with our money. Our society rewards us. You get a freaking nice car, well, you're going to get that, all those likes and that dopamine hits. You max out your retirement, no one cares. But you know what, man? When I'm 60 years old, when I'm 70 years old, I'm retired, I'm not going to be asking my kids for money. When I'm 70 years old, I'm not going to be working in a freaking, I don't even know if like a Walmart greeter position is still going to be available. Like, I mean, they already limited that position, but you guys get what I mean. Like, for me, Tan said it best. I care, you know, everyone has their own motives for financial independence or their own motives for personal finance. Some people want a higher standard of living. You know, some people just want to do it for their kids. You know, for me personally, I want to give every opportunity possible for my future kids. I want to be secure. And most importantly, I want to be self-reliant. You know, I want to be independent, self-reliant, man. Like, dude, holy crap, there are some people out there that, you know, they're like 40 years old. They take money from their parents and they take money from their kids. They're stealing from two generations. Like, for me, dude, there's no way I'm doing that. Like, I'm taking care of myself, and it starts with just understanding your own behavior and where you're spending your money.
I don't think there's a better way to end this podcast, but on that note. So thank you, Charles, for being on. If people want to find out more about you, what you're up to, and what you're offering, where can people go?
You can go to my blog, charlesngo.com. I don't really do social media, so you can go to my blog. And I don't think I write too much about personal finance, but you know, I do have a lot of business articles and a lot of productivity articles. So you guys like Asians and you guys like productivity, well, I am Asian, I am productive. So there's a different flavor if you want something different from Tan and Steam.
Thank you. That was awesome. Thank you for being on today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
At Asian Efficiency, we believe that you shouldn't have to sacrifice your personal life to get things done. You should be able to get the important things done in the time you have.
That's why we built a productivity quiz to help you maximize the time you have, increase your energy, and get you more focused. We've helped tens of thousands of people increase their productivity, and within 2 minutes of taking a productivity quiz, we'll show you exactly what you need to do next to increase your productivity. To take the quiz, just go to theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Don't let your never-ending to-do list drag you down and stop sacrificing your health and family to get things done. Take the quiz today, and you'll be on your way to becoming superhuman productive. You can also find links to everything we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/261. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or star in Overcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.